Our next speaker is going to be Kat Stemmel-Thomas, and she's the Project Director of Influencing Outcomes for Children Who Are Deafblind with Cochlear Implants from Western Oregon University. Please welcome Kat.
Today, I'm really going to be talking about documenting the effects of cochlear implants and intervention using LINA with children who are deafblind. So really talking about using one technology to measure the effects of another technology, which I think is very exciting. I too want to frame the LINA use that we are conducting within a broader framework of our project. So we were funded, we're on our second grant, to look at the outcomes for children who are deafblind and have cochlear implants, and second, to identify those factors such as age of implant, hearing age, time and sound, as well as the effects, usually negative, of other additional disabilities. I think that parent talk and the way they talk, not just the rates, are one very critical factor for these children with the most significant multiple disabilities. And of course, I'm a very big advocate of children and intervention and looking at influencing outcomes so we can increase those for better speech and communication outcomes. Very quickly, the demographics for our entire project is the majority of our kids who are involved are assessed at post-implant, and we do a variety of assessments across time. We're again identifying more and more pre-implant children so they can participate, and then we do have about 19-20 pre-post implant children. Now the LINA children, we are trying to target 20 children from the pre-post implant groups there. So children come in before they receive their implant so we can use the LINA as well as do the assessments on those children and feel that's very important. Currently, 19 out of 102 children have bilateral implants, as this little boy is so cutely demonstrating. I'm going to talk about case examples. No correlations here. We have 10 children currently within some point in our research. Out of the entire 102 children, you can see the individualization of those children just with the presence of other disabilities. Only 12% of those 102 children have just deaf blindness, if you want to say just deaf blindness. So again, we're seeing tremendous increases too across time. The majority of our children, 25%, are complications of prematurity. The other 25% are children with CHARGE syndrome. So you can see tremendous increases and percentages of children with physical challenges, cognitive delays and issues, behavioral issues, as well as complex health care needs. Again, the majority of our children in the study are under 4 years of age, so we're probably going to see these disabilities increase to some degree as they age as well. We have a number of research studies, but I am going to, again, focus just on study B. This came from observations in the first grant where as we would go in to assess children in the homes, in schools, it's like, it seems like the parents don't talk that much to the children, or they're talking less after the child is implanted and not knowing why, but to see if this was the case or not. And I said, thank God for LINA, because we asked that question before we knew the existence of LINA and it really saved us. Just to give you an example of some of the assessments that we repeat across time, again, are the CSBS, the MacArthur, it sounds like a number of us are using that and really loving it. The Rinell-Zinkin goes up to 60 months. It was validated for children with blindness or vision impairment, so very critical that we're using that, as well as assessments of auditory perception, the MAGE, the MAZE, and some speech intelligibility for a few children who are at that level. Again, the research question, do caregivers increase their talk? I would assume, I made an assumption, so did some of my colleagues, that if you spend $90,000 on an implant, maybe, and get two, which is $180,000, is you'll talk more as a parent or even a teacher. But there are probably so many other variables that are interfering, such as getting the child with cerebral palsy to keep the implant on, to make sure he's not ripping it off. So again, not judging parents at all. But I think it's so nice to talk to people who are using the LINA because you don't have to go through this and I can talk very fast. The audio environment, I know we're talking about the critical nature of turns of conversation,
But I think that Christine, wherever she is, might agree that for kids who are deaf, using a cochlear implant, the auditory environment is a very important factor because most of the kids don't have behavioral assessments. So we don't even know if their cochlear implants are mapped correctly. So if parents are talking to the child 20 feet away, and then you throw on blindness so the child can't even see what the parent is doing, it becomes even more critical that we teach the parents to interact with the child on a very, very close level. And of course, we're very interested in the adult verbalizations, not only the rate, but how they use it. We're not that concerned with child vocalizations, at least for a year out, because we know that many of our children do not even exhibit pre-linguistic communication. And we feel that may be a groundwork, but we also feel very strongly that the more and how a parent talks and interacts with their child or caregiver, the more that child's auditory perception might increase, the receptive communication and language, which again, hopefully are procures to the child using conversation and then looking at terms of conversation. And again, the evaluator is analyzing it in many different ways. I'm just sharing some examples today. This is a child on one end of the continuum. Parent has a plus master's degree, but a child with extremely severe disabilities. And again, you can see that auditory environment, which concerns me. This child, even though the adult words are fairly, in some hours, they're non-existent, but again, what the child is hearing probably is not going to be too meaningful. There are some nice vocalizations and some of that. So again, words to the child are fairly low. And then we have the star, where we have parents who can go above 5,000 quite regularly on any given hour when they're interacting with this child. And again, it's a good thing you awarded Sunshine Cottage the degree, because this little girl was greatly influenced by Sunshine Cottage, and tremendous. And again, this little girl has had 18 surgeries, tremendous severe bilateral cleft, but tremendous growth. And but you can see too, she's speaking words and sentences. So again, a variety. This little girl, again, was post-implant, but she was received an FM system. So one of our questions, again, for a post-implant child was, are we going to see some dramatic increases in child vocalizations in the preschool environment once she got her implant or her FM system? This was after. And again, we see some nice increases with the preschool staff. But again, we're not seeing many increases there, just some increase in the terms of conversation, which is positive. But again, we will repeat this across time to look at the gradual effects of the child's conversational words and conversational turns. A second child here, this child was a twin born at 23 weeks. Again, parents, we get some decrease, even though the child has gotten a second implant. And again, the child's decreasing somewhat. The child had a profound infection and they had to remove the implant. But I want to share with you a little bit more about this child, because this I think is critical, is if we look very quickly, all of our children are receiving typical Part C intervention. So these children often have five or six service providers in the home, but no service providers are teaching parents how to talk differently, how to talk more, or how to interact and embed skills within routines. But again, the prelocutionary, the prelinguistic communication for this little boy has almost no vision, cerebral palsy, did not increase after the second implant, even after one implant was removed. But when we really went in and worked with the family, the nurses, to try to get, first of all, the prelinguistic, and then to increase through the MacArthur, the child's understanding of individual words such as bite, up, outside. So working with the intervention at that point. Now looking at another little child here, again, we are seeing a decrease. We're not seeing an increase in parent talk. However, you know, I'm fairly satisfied that that's a nice rate per hour for the parents. We are seeing with many of the children, and we don't have that many in the study yet, but an increase. So once they get their implant, parents don't necessarily talk more,
but we're getting an increase in vocalizations, and with the majority of children, those vocalizations are vowel sounds. Very few consonants, almost no words until we're a year out. Again, seeing the same kind of typical relationship here is just a slight decrease. Again, this mother's not talking that much to the child, but even with all of his disabilities, this child is really increasing his vocalizations, the turns of conversation. For children who are this severe, profound, I think those turns are fairly significant, but we have to look at on a child-to-child basis. This child was from India, and this is primarily the nurse. This child just finished intervention, and the nurse is returning the LENAs as we speak. The first time we do the assessment with the LENAs, we send out three DLPs. After that, and we don't count the first, we send two out each time that we send them out to the parents and look at that. So again, I'm going to jump to intervention. As we feel that we can increase not only the rate of parents talk, but to increase prelinguistic communication, opportunities for communication by leading and teaching parents and working with them to embed skills within the routines, using systematic teaching where we teach the parent to be the major provider. We don't come in and say, see how nicely I do, and then you do it when I leave. Again, targets, we're using single case designs across, first of all, just descriptive talking, opportunities for partial participation, using that sequence of teaching, and then we come in and teach the caregiver to provide more directives, to opportunities to identify objects, and then the third phase is opportunities for verbal imitation and for gestural and verbal communication. So again, I'm just going to share some data with one child here. And again, the auditory sandwich is very important here, where we're teaching parents to individualize for each child that if the child is totally blind and the parent says up, and then she might say up and give a touch cue. A child with enough vision, you might use a gestural cue. For a child who's higher cognitively and has prelinguistic communication, you might do a sign. So every child's sandwich is individualized. You lead with the auditory, you support for understanding, and you end with just the auditory. So that auditory cortex gets stimulated, but within the context of eating, reading books, or other meaningful activities. This child is not that unusual for many of the kids in our studies, and that's why we have such few children. This child was eligible for an implant. He had a progressive loss. He wasn't implanted for 6 months, so we went in and did another battery of assessments. We did another LENAs, and again, but with the assessments, even though we see tremendous drops in his verbal and the mother's as well, and there's probably a relationship there, not much of a drop in his, but he was increasing his cognitive skills, his daily life skills in the same period, so that's very positive, and that's why we need those other assessments. Post-implant, yes, we got an increase from the last pre-implant, but it still was less than when he was vocalizing more as well. We got about the same with his vocalizations. And again, no prelinguistic communication here. He wasn't using gestures, very infrequently taking the mother's hand and pushing her towards something he wanted. We used the LENA data here, and again, with many of our parents, I'm not sure we're going to see that as a significant intervention. And then we came in and did a very intensive 18 sessions with this boy, which was once a week in 5 months. And we'll continue across time because this little boy now, from communication with his mother, is beginning to say a few words more consistently, especially mama. So we're going to see more words. A delay with four of our children because of one of the manufacturers is on hold. So we're not getting implants until June with several children. Others are medical issues. Overall, we're not seeing, at least so far, parents increasing their verbalizations until intervention. So again, we feel that we can influence parents' intervention to include more of the prelinguistic, but still the importance of parent communication and adult words to their children within critical routines. Am I done?
You
10 minutes for questions, and then can I tell a little a quick story?
Of course you can.
And again, I'm really, giving praise to Sunshine Cottage. When I was assessing the little girl who goes to their school in October, one of the assessment items was on the rail of zinc and was kind of like, take the two pencils and put them in the big box. And here's a child with charge syndrome, profoundly deaf. This is just amazing after you've worked with like hundreds and hundreds of deafblind children. She said, why don't I take one of the pencils and put it in the big box and keep the other one to write with? I mean, that's kind of it in a nutshell. So, thanks for the Lena for providing data for so many. So, Christine, do you have anything to say about the audio environment and how it may be even more critical for kids with cochlear implants, especially if we're not sure how well their implants are mapped?